Blog Talk Radio.
This is the UR Tennis Network. We are the voice of tennis. We enlist a team of passionate tennis enthusiasts who promote our sport relentlessly. We strive continuously to bring news and information for players, parents, coaches, officials, businesses, and anyone else who loves tennis. We seek active participation from communities interested in tennis, but tennis may not be interested in them.
And gentlemen, let's get ready to be inspired! Introducing in the red corner, American Tennis! And introducing in the blue corner, your host for American Tennis, Mr. Chuck Griese! Ladies and gentlemen, time to get in the game.
And good morning, and a very, very blessed and Merry Christmas to all of you out there who will be listening to the UR Tennis Network this morning and American Tennis. And this is Coach Chuck Griese, and thank you so very, very much for tuning in. And I wanted to say, just first of all, out of the blocks, that we are extremely blessed. We're blessed to have a Savior. We're blessed to have this game that all of our lives have been changed with. For me, it was an afterthought. It was something I did as a basketball player growing up in Indiana. And I've been able to do so many things. My whole life has been formed because of the events in tennis, and with God's hand in that, and my family, my education, my jobs I've had, my travel around the world. And I know that most of you are the same out there as well. I'd like to thank Jason Haynes and the UR Tennis Network for having the American Tennis Show on this year. We'll be starting, I think, about our 29th or 30th week already. But I wanted to say this as well before I start. With all the events that have happened here in December and the tragedies up there in Connecticut, and I know we're going to talk about tennis, but I made up my mind with everything that happened this fall with the elections and with those terrible things in Connecticut, the shootings, that I was not going to just be void anymore. And you know, people say, oh, be politically correct. But what I've come up with, I realize that, dang on it, it is spiritually incorrect to deny anything and to ever to deny the reason for the season of Christmas and Christ. And to deny any ever. Again, when it might be politically incorrect, but you know what? It's spiritually correct to talk about Christ, to talk about Jesus, to talk about our faith. And, you know, anyone out there that is offended, I'm sorry, you can call in. We will talk about whatever you want to talk about, but never again will I be spiritually incorrect or slow on the uptake here. And as people said to me around the D.C. area, they would say, happy holidays. I'd say Merry Christmas, and remember the reason for this season is Jesus' birth. And just to be spiritually correct on the thing, That's what I'm doing. So with that, we've got a mission here with American Tennis, and I want to do everything and anything possible, and we should as well, to make sure that we are promoting tennis in the right way as such a wonderful learning tool for everybody and anybody who is able to play sports and even to hold a racket. And there's a lot of things going on now, and we do find fault with so many things, but I'm going to do something quite different today, not just it's Christmas and getting guests on the show. It is something I didn't even want to try to do. This is precious family time. But I'm going to talk today about the 12 wishes, the 12 Christmas wishes for USA Tennis. And I'm going to go through a list here. And if you want to call in and talk about this, please call us on this is the UR Tennis Network. You can get it on your iPod or your iTunes phone. It has a list of all the wonderful shows the UR Tennis Network has on. And you can call in as well at area code 714-583-6853. That's 714-583-6853. I know we're going to have Jason Haynes on the show here as well, as I'm very, very thankful that he has put the UR Tennis Network together, and he's got, I think, about 10 shows now. And boy, I'm going to get him to go through the whole schedule for you so that you will have that gift this coming year of being able to listen to tennis just about every day. If you want to email me, you can do it at chuck@coachcreasy.com, chuck@coachcreasy.com. My website is chuckcreasy.net, and I am doing a mentorship program, online mentorship program, at T3 Mentorship, the letter T and then 3, and then mentorship.com. So when we come back, we're going to go to commercial here. We're going to come back, and we're going to talk about the 12 Christmas wishes for USA Tennis. And if you have your own list of wishes, please call in, chime in. We'd love to have you on the network. So we're going to go to commercial here, and this is the UR Tennis Network and American Tennis.
Alternative Lighting and Power is a renewable energy solutions-focused company with an emphasis in helping athletic facilities. We would like to upgrade your tennis complex to the 21st century. We offer a range of services that will upgrade your tennis complex. We can use our technology to make your facility virtually disappear from the energy grid. We can provide lights, scoreboards, scoring systems, cooling systems, heating systems, camera systems, covered seating areas, wastewater management, and even new buildings. Our company is located in Houston, Texas, but we provide services to all 50 states and internationally. We would love to visit with you about our opportunities. Please contact Ed Love at 832-549-4193 or email at elove@alternativel-p.com. You can also visit our website at www.alternativel-p.com. We are the sunny side of business.
is Chuck Creasy back with American Tennis, and a very, very merry, merry Christmas to you. God bless you all, and thankful for this wonderful game of tennis. So here we go, the 12 Christmas wishes for USA Tennis this year for the coming 2013. And number one, and this is probably the most important, have you ever noticed how in tennis we are so very, very slow to lift other people up? We are usually the first to criticize things, people, organizations, and we all have a critical eye, but we don't boost each other up. I've never been on a golf course where somebody didn't walk up to help me. I've never been in many sports where people didn't walk up and help you. And there are instances in tennis where people do come and they'll help you out, but pretty much you have to be in their corner, in their political realm of things. So this, number one, the most important is for our people, players, coaches, everybody in the tennis world, let's start building each other up. My mama used to say that you'd never make your own light shine brighter by trying to put someone else's out. And I don't know why it is about human nature. I think it's the competitive nature of tennis, how we will, from the day one, we are competing against another person instead of the great game of tennis. I always tell juniors now that you're competing against the great game of tennis, those tennis gods, and are basically presenting a situation with the win and the tough opponent here, and your job is to compete against the great game of tennis. But for what it's worth, I think we need to start boosting people up a lot more. And the first wish of tennis is let's get to the place where we try to lift others up, and we will be lifted up as well. And we definitely need to do that in USA Tennis. And even though we point out the tough things and the things aren't going quite as well, we need to start lifting others up and promoting other things. And that leads us to number two.
Hey,
number two, where we're dropping off here a lot, I would like to promote as much as we can high schools and collegiate and community college tennis in the United States. Now, we're going to come back to this one in a minute when we talk about the college segment and promoting of all of college tennis, but I think probably the biggest thing beside not helping others out and everybody in front of us and being very quick to find out the negatives, which is number one. The number two thing that we need to do is try to really find a good system to promote high school tennis again in the United States and community college. High school tennis, we have thousands and thousands and thousands of youngsters that play high school tennis. But the system really is not a great one, with the exception of Texas and perhaps California. Now, let me explain. The Texas system is a great one. The Texas system has a system where the kids play a short dual match season in the fall and then play tournaments the rest of the year. This is a format that Coach Randy Blumendahl at Indiana University is trying to get colleges to adopt as well. So if we could get most high schools to embrace more tournament tennis throughout the year, have a short season in the fall for both boys and girls, knock them both out at the same time and have those team seasons where there is good merit in team competition. But primarily, kids improve the most with tournament tennis. Even though we love dual match competition, tournament tennis is where players improve the fastest and they do their best. I would like to try to promote this as much as we can with colleges as well. Coach Randy Blumendahl has a great system that he's trying to promote with the ITA. Now, I've tied this together with the collegiate system in junior colleges and community college because we have hundreds of opportunities lost right now for American players because not just high school tennis, but in community colleges, there should be a thriving team at each and every program in America. And I think we may have Jason Haynes on the line here. He probably would like to say something about this, if we could re-energize the community college tennis. Jason, are you on the line today?
Yeah, Coach, I'm here. And you know, it's going to be hard for me to listen and not chime in as it would be for you. You know, and I will adamantly always say that your books and your philosophies that you gave to the tennis world are right on target. And I think that one of the ideas here, and I believe that it came out of your one of your books, was the idea of cooperative drills, and then there are competitive drills. You know, and I really believe that American tennis doesn't know how to cooperate. You know, we don't do enough cooperating on the court to make each other better. So how do we learn how to compete? You know, and in your first statement that you gave today, your number one wish and number two are both based on cooperation. You know, if we cooperate more in the high school world, if we cooperate more at the community college level and that with the communities, then we start to be able to be competitive. But we don't even know how to get along with each other right now. You know, everybody thinks they've got the next best thing, but nobody wants to share why they think they've got the next best thing, because it's their thing. And cooperation would be a tremendous benefit here, don't you think?
Yeah, Jason, the biggest thing I do, whenever I give a talk and seminar, every seminar that I give anywhere in the world now, I started out with, I do my total tennis training intro, but then I put the most important rules for our coaches are the two rules, the law of reciprocities and the law of abundance. Law of abundance is one from the Tony Robbins books that I got years ago, that there's enough success to go around for everybody, and somebody else doing well does not make you look bad. However, the law of reciprocity is from James Dobson. I got many, many years back in the 80s, actually, and the law of reciprocity says that whatever you give to someone else, it comes back to you tenfold. And this is a hard thing for people to understand, but you know, as a Christian, and I know as a Christian, that when we give or tithe, there's never been a time that you don't give something away. There's not a check in the mail you didn't expect, and it's crazy the way it happens. But I've learned this with ideas as well, that if you give your ideas away, we're always afraid somebody else is going to use your ideas. And you know what? If they use them and people prosper and benefit, it's wonderful. But most of the time, a bad person is not going to use your ideas. They just say, hey, look, I'm going to use my own ideas, and I don't believe in this stuff anyway. But thank goodness for Paul Scarpa in my life early when I started coaching, Jason. Thank goodness that I got to work for Harry Hopman when I first got out of college and saw how he gave things away to everybody around him. And he didn't care about it, much of the materialism. And thank goodness for people like a J.W. Eisenhower. And thank goodness, hey, listen, out of the blue, and I'm being thankful to you for calling me out of the blue and asking me to do this radio program. But the law of reciprocities is the one. And no, I definitely want you to jump in there today. I got to go on to number three, though, because this ties in with our basic love of the game of tennis. Number three on the Christmas wish list for USA Tennis is that we would stop letting technology do the part of just basic learning of the skills. I'm 100% for a smaller racket that is even a wood racket for kids. Look, they put in these 10 and under green mandate ball. I don't want anything mandated. But as coaches and teachers, we should realize, if you remember back to why you played tennis, and Jason, I'm going to recall this real quickly. It was on the Mats Wielander show a couple weeks ago. But I played tennis the first 2 years not for the competitive part of it, not for anything else except for this what they call a great feeling or a dopamine rush from making great contact with the ball. The technology has overcome the feel that you get from a small racket, from a wood racket, from a racket where you do the work. And with kids, we should never, ever be giving them a high-tech racket to learn out of the blocks. No matter how it enhances their performance, it takes away from their learning of the skills that are so critical to for the game. So I told the other twice, I think, on the show now, I've mentioned that there's three drugs you get from playing tennis, and I'm working on an article right now, and I don't know how to, Jason, how I'm going to title it. I play drugs, play tennis to get drugs. I don't think that would be a good way to put it, but you do. You get three drugs: the dopamine rush from making great contact with the ball, number two, the endorphins from training and from the running, the physical tiredness you get, but also the adrenaline that you get from competing, the excitement of competing. And I'll tell you that I could live forever just on the dopamine rush of hitting the ball well. And maybe some of you folks out there will disagree with this, but I do not believe these high-tech rackets give you the same feel you used to get with a small wood racket with a set of gut. And if you remember back, Jason, the clay courts, being able to play in a clay court with a set of gut strings, there was nothing better. Now, the byproduct of that, big-time love for the sport from childhood, that the kids would feel and understand and know forever, and that's what they would seek as the process of learning the game well instead of competing first. So competition is critically important. We need to compete. But I believe that with the loss of the dopamine that we got into the brain from that same thing that we got from hitting a baseball well, you hit blades or when you play golf or make contact with the old persimmon woods when you play golf. But these things are critically important to bring out the art of the game. And it, again, tennis is not about sports science as much as it is the love of the art and the feel that you get from playing it. So number three there is let's bring back small rackets for kids and rethink what we've done to the game with all of the high-tech equipment. So that's number one, two, and three. Okay. Number four.
Coach, right before we get to this, and you've got a caller on the line here that we're going to bring in just a second. We'll see if they have a question for you. I actually have two, but one of them is an 864 number, so I'm going to guess that maybe a family member. You know,
864 is, I think, a family member. Is it? And if it is my Mama Beth, if it's Mama Beth out there, is it a 864? What's the digit? So 268.
97.
Okay.
979697. Now she's been on there for a while, so I'm gonna let her listen. But
that's probably my or Mama Beth.
Now think about the sports that you've mentioned about this dopamine thing. And. And in golf, they've gotten away from wood as well. And I'm not going to say that the golfers have put up better scores or play better golf. I think they can hit the ball farther, that's for sure. But baseball, why hasn't baseball put in – why do they stop letting the kids use the metal rackets or metal bats before they get into the pros? You know, if they're so good, these metal bats, just like in tennis, why isn't – baseball using them at the pro level?
Well, you know, this whole discussion, Jason, but really with taking away the love of the sport and the love of the feel, the process of it. And again, I'm going to write a long article about this, one of my goals over Christmas. But this dopamine rush that we got from making great contact with a wooden bat and just the sound of it, or what we felt with a wooden tennis racket, this has been lost. In the quest for performance, in the quest for quick fixes, in the quest for let's win more, let's have this. But again, hard to pick up is hard to put down. The game used to be hard to pick up, and it's very hard to put down. We never put it down our whole lives once we were hooked on it. Look, easy to pick up is easy to put down. We're missing the boat when we make something so easy out of the blocks for kids that they don't fall in love with it. I just want you all to remember that quote. Easy to pick up, easy to put down, hard to pick up, hard to put down. Let's move on to number four. I got these all time here. I'm going to get through all 12 of the wish list here. But number four, and a thing that we really, really need to think about our wish list is let's make doubles important again. And doubles, the double skills have been lost, the volleying, the approach shots, and we've lost the skills. The kids grow up without knowing how to serve volley, without knowing how to hit transition shots. And we can argue forever about what's missing in the game or whether or not you need it. But the biggest thing we've lost in diluting, I always say diluting, polluting, and prostituting the greatest game in the world, but let's just leave it at diluting, not necessarily polluting, but we diluted the doubles games by these pro sets and just sort of making it an afterthought in following the pros and what they were doing with this no-ad scoring and stuff that we all know this was just a bone thrown to the pros to just keep doubles alive. And we should not, with junior tennis, be following what the pros did. So here's my proposal. Let's make doubles important again. Let's, at tournaments, have a structure where we, on Fridays, when the kids first get there, they'll play one or maybe two doubles matches out of the blocks on the Friday, starting at 3 or 4 in the afternoon, and they'll at least get one doubles match out of the way. Now, with this doubles match, they get into the tournament. They work their way into the tournament. The parents meet each other. The USTA people could be there to have a little bit of a get-together, a meeting on the latest rules. The kids, they could have a pizza party. And what we've lost, beside the physical skills and tennis skills in doubles, we've lost the social skills. And another big reason why I know that I stayed in tennis, when I was a kid for the friendships, Jason. I don't know about you. But we've lost doubles, and let's make it the first thing that we do, two rounds of doubles before we do anything else. You should do it at the pro level as well on a Sunday and a Monday. Make it Fan Appreciation Day, and they could get three-fourths of the draw out of town, and then they could figure out how to put the other matches into play. But let's get doubles back into the equation. And people may argue, well, look, the reason we can't do this is because we need the consolation matches. No, we don't. We need the consolation matches only at our national championships. And I'll talk about that in a few minutes. But only at our big national championships, four of them a year, we should have consolation matches where kids get a double chance. Other than that, they should learn that if they lose singles, they're out. And if you want to have a first-round consolation, you can have a first-round consolation match. But let's make doubles more important than the consolation matches that the kids are defaulting out of and tanking, and they don't care about anyway, and the USTA has diluted them by putting these silly 10-point tiebreakers in. So number four, let's make doubles more important. Jason, you got anything to say about that real quick?
Well, real quick, Coach, let me tell you, and think about this just a little bit. Our double system in America has been influenced internationally. Think about the greatest player who never played a strong game of doubles. That would be Bjorn Borg, in my opinion, right? Borg
right.
never was on top of the game. Same generation, you had John McEnroe, who set records on the Pro Tour for doubles titles, right?
Yeah.
Okay, so who do more people want to follow now? They want to follow the international model in this, which has been Borg, who retired early and couldn't regain his status. But if you look at the longevity of our sport, you have no greater example than John McEnroe in this, because John McEnroe in the 50s is competing on the pro tour, the seniors tour, and kicking everybody's butt because he has a true love for the game. He learned how to play singles and doubles and make them very, very good, and I think you're right on with that.
Well, we need to do it. In college, it's a really a bad thing that just happened at the ITA convention. Most of you don't know this is hot breaking news, but they're going to make next semester the doubles only a 5-game set or a 6-game set, no ad scoring, and to just get it over with and to dilute the importance of doubles once again, and it's a bad, bad mistake. So on number four on the Christmas wish list, tennis wish list for USA is let's make doubles important again. Number four, this ties in somewhat. or excuse me, number five in the Christmas wishes, the 12 wishes for USA Tennis. Let's play full matches again. And let's get over this stupidity that we're doing with 10-point tiebreakers. And as there's a couple things we're doing to dilute the greatest and most precious heirloom that we have in tennis. The most precious heirloom that we have, and the thing that makes it so much more outstanding than other racket sport games, whether it's racquetball or ping pong or badminton, is our scoring system. Our scoring system is based on threes. Now, before you go and say, well, look, I played Nouad at one time and it made me very clutch on the 40-40 point or the three-all point, think about this couple things here. With Nouad scoring, you do not have to learn how to group points. I can win a point, you can win a point, Jason. I can win, you win, I win, you win, I win. I only had to win one in a row to win that game. The beautiful thing about scoring in tennis is that it's based on threes. Unless you win the first point of the game, you always have to win 3 points in a row. Other than once you could win two and two, but you still have to group points. In almost all of the games, 75% of the games, you have to learn how to group points. If we play Nouad scoring, and then we'll talk about 10-point tiebreakers here briefly, but Nouad scoring, if we play Nouad scoring, the kids never learn how to group 3 points in a row. And you can say, well, they learn how to be clutch. Every point is important. No, the important thing is that they learn how to group 3 points in a row. Three in a row starts to flow. That's one of the principles of momentum control. We often play conversion sets or sets with your kids where you have to win 3 points in a row. If they cannot win three in a row, it's hard for them to learn how to win in tennis. The player who gets comfortable at playing ahead with the lead usually ends up being the superior player. Everybody plays well from behind and puts one or 2 points together, but it is carrying the lead and being able to play when your hands are breaking down and your fine motor skills are breaking down. So let's get back to full matches as well. The 10-point tiebreaker is an atrocity, and the reason that it is, I'll use a comparison I often use, and that's boxing. Could you imagine in boxing if you got to the eighth round of a fight and one fighter's ready to go into the ropes, he's leaning into the ropes, and they call a timeout, and they say, okay, now we're going to box as hard as we can for 30 seconds. Well, you know, then you basically take away the work that the one player's done for the whole fight. And this is just wrong. Our kids do not learn from this process. The 10-point tiebreaker was set up to make matches shorter and to get it over with. And I think it's a very, very poor job in using one's imagination to come up with a scoring system that is fair. I'll give you one, for example. I told USTA some officials recently that if you're going to use this 10-point tiebreaker and you want to just shorten matches, let's play the tiebreaker first. The first set is a 10-point tiebreaker. The second point and third set, which will all be deciding sets, play the full set. Play the full set out. Now, if you think about this, all that you ask the lesser player to do is to win a set and a tiebreaker. The lesser player will never win two sets. The lesser player often wins the first set, is getting grinded down in the second set, either tanks or saves his energy for the tiebreaker and then wins a tiebreaker and wins the match. If you play the tiebreaker first, then you have an opportunity to play a full set for the deciding sets. Now, in saying that, I rated these two systems, number 7 and number 8 of every scoring system for player development that you could have. Number 1, best for player development, 3 out of 5 sets. Number 2, 2 out of 3 sets. Number 3 would play 2 full sets. Play the 2 full sets starting at 2-2 and then a full set for the third. You could start at 2-2 for the third set if you had to. There's many other things that you could do. but I'm 100% on my wish list. Would just dump this idea of NOAAD scoring. Jimmy Allen came up with this, and it is an atrocity. I had to coach it for 14 years, and I know every painful detriment to the game of tennis that comes with NOAAD scoring. And I could go on and on. For example, has anybody ever thought out there, if you win the first 2 points of the game in NOAAD scoring, you have a 16-1 odds of winning the game. 30-15, you have an 8-1 odds. That's 1 over 2 times 1 over 2 times 1 over 2. And the point being is that with 16-1 odds or 8-1 odds, you would think that a player would never lose the game if he got the third point or the second or third point. But the point is this, the penalty is that the game reverses momentum up and down, up and down, up and down, and players never, ever learn how to construct points when they're ahead. They're always playing crisis management points. Boy, I went on for a long time there, Jason, but any quick comments on number five there, play full matches?
Well, Coach, I'm never one that is for addition through subtraction. I don't understand how the mathematicians of the world ever get anything positive if they keep subtracting things. So I am for full-blown matches. I'm a true conservative in this approach to tennis in regards to I don't understand why we're changing the game. Golf doesn't shorten its game to 16 holes. Baseball's not six innings. You know what I'm saying here? I mean, I don't understand why all of a sudden we got to tinker with the greatest sport ever. You know, I'm sorry if you don't get it. If you're a football fan and you don't get tennis, that's your rotten luck. You know, if you think that playing football for 8 years is a great thing, then so be it. But tennis people get it. We play for a lifetime. I love the 2-out-of-3 battle. If you're any kind of competitor out there, you don't want to really play tiebreakers to decide a match.
Good players do it. Kalamazoo, again, 51 players pulled out of the back draw this last year in Kalamazoo. And I think people say, well, they were there. They were disappointed to be in the back draw. It never used to be that way when they played out the matches. And we'll see what we can get done there. But we've got to work on that. The other thing about fake injuries and fake bathroom breaks, here's my proposal very quick that goes along with this topic, is that if you have an injury or a bathroom break, it should be a one-game courtesy to the opponent for breaking the momentum. If you're ahead, you can take an injury break or a bathroom break anytime you want. But if you're behind and you take one and you do it strategically, it should be a one-game, I don't want to say penalty, but it's one-game courtesy. Let's go to a quick commercial if we can here, and we'll be right back. We've got still 7 to go and some very heated things to talk about. So this is American Tennis with Coach Chuck Creasy, and thanks for Jason Haynes being on the line this day after Christmas.
Made in America, born in a hot land, raised up a family, King James and Uncle Sam. Semper Fi tattooed on his tombstone. Spent a little more in the store for a tag in the back of this USA. Won't buy nothing that he can't fix. With WD-40 and a Craftsman wrench, he ain't prejudiced. He's just made in America.
Jason Haynes, the UR Tennis Network's Chief Executive Officer. Over the last 14 months, we have undergone a lot of changes here at the UR Tennis Network, and the Nike Tennis Camps have been one of our strongest supporters. They have had a very successful 2012 summer camp season and now are planning for 2013. We would like to thank them for allowing us to be an advertising avenue for their tennis camps. As we leave the summer, we want to encourage you to check out www.ussportcamps.com and start planning your next Nike camp experience. They have locations all over the U.S. for both adults and juniors. The Nike camps are offered in other sports such as golf, volleyball, soccer, swimming, softball, running, water polo, lacrosse, and field hockey. we want to encourage you to consider the Nike Camp experience for your tennis needs. These camps are run by successful tennis coaches and offer a fun camp involvement where you learn new skills and make new friends. Be sure to check them out at www.ussportcamps.com or call them at 1-800-NIKE-CAMP and take your game to the next level.
Coach Chuck Creasy on the day after Christmas, and we are talking about the 12 Christmas wishes for USA Tennis. And we're up to number six now. Number six talks about college tennis, and I've often talked about college tennis being the necessary synapse or the connector between junior tennis and professionals. And as we really, really in this country depend and rely on college systems so much, I think that we need to make some critical adjustments. And one of the things we've talked a lot about, and this will be number one, is that we need a two-foreigner limit on teams, scholarship limit or three, 50-50. We would appreciate anything that allows us to start recruiting primarily American players. Now, let me make this point, and Brian Parrott makes it very, very, very well, as he's on a committee with me working on this situation. If you're in the top 40 in the United States, junior tennis, or top 50, you won't have a problem. You'll be recruited and recruited well. But if you're 50 on down, and by the way, we rank too many players with the USTA, 300, 400, but if you're 50 on down and you aren't necessarily a blue-chip recruit, you're not just competing against American players. You're competing against 100 other countries out there that actively recruit our American coaches, and they actively invite our American coaches over to their countries to look at their top players, top stable of players. Now, this is just a horrible situation, as the level two of all Americans, the ones that are the late bloomers, the ones that should be getting the training and using the colleges for the training, are getting left out. Now, many coaches will speak up and say, look, my job is to win for Dear Old State University, and it doesn't matter who I get, everybody's recruiting around the country. And fair enough for one or two players, but not fair when you recruit a foreign player over the player that's number three or four or five or eight or ten in your state that really could use the development time and maybe is a late bloomer and can step up. This is a horrible situation, but we need a limit on foreign players. I believe the junior college or community college system, if we could revive it, and I know Jason Haynes believes in it quite a lot, and Jerry Simmons, who we had on a couple weeks ago on the show, is working actively to revive this in Texas. If it could be reinstated, we could get a lot more of our American kids into a developmental track here. But right now, after junior tennis is over for so many kids, and the USTA's come up or the ITA's come up with this club tennis deal, but really it makes sort of it's a fraternity tennis situation. And it's not for a developmental situation. And this is number six. Anything quick on that one, Jason?
My situation is that common sense, being a spiritual person, you know, common sense should rule out in a lot of these situations. And what I'm understanding and being on this side of things for the last 18 months is common sense is nowhere to be found. I mean, if you want to revitalize American tennis, if you want to revitalize America itself, you better get into the local communities.
That's right.
And so, So why isn't it that the ITA isn't out there promoting an American tilted division? Why isn't the USTA out there promoting an American tilted division? I can only think of you know, money's got to be the answer here. I mean, I love what you have to say. You know, the USTA doesn't do a thing to promote a U.S. tennis player for collegiate tennis. That's absurd.
Very quickly, Brian Perrin and I are engaging the USTA to try to get them to have at least a USA college ranking system, individual and team. Come on, we have ESPN rankings, Kodak All-American teams. I don't know if that team's still around or not with the way Kodak's been doing, but we used to have the AP, UPI, all of these different rankings. Why not have the USTA have a college ranking system as well? And daggone it, one of the things we're calling for is for them to incentivize those teams and those coaches who are primarily American. And I wanted you to bring up Coach J.P. Weber's website. It's called CoachJPWeber.com. Has articles every week on the road less traveled, where he compares American college players with foreign college players. But we really need to do more and more shows on this. We are addressing it. So that's wish number six. Wish number seven, and for colleges, let's be structured for player development again. In 1991, we lost all of our structure for player development. We're not developing players in the United States in colleges anymore. The USTA came and basically ran a socialist program, or not the USTA, the NCAA came in and developed a socialist program where they de-incentivized anybody that worked hard, anybody that really wants to work more than 4 hours a day or 20 hours a week. 25 matches per year is absolutely ridiculous. Baseball has preserved 60. Football has preserved like 14 or 15. Now, come on, give me a break. Tennis is a timing sport. You need 35 or 40 competitive matches minimum a year if you want to develop into a player. The bottom line is college tennis is not set up now for a developmental process. And again, I fault the ITA for not really addressing this in this way. We have pretty much an Ivy League mentality with the leaders of the ITA who do not understand that it is blood, sweat, and a lot of repetitions that makes America great and makes tennis players great. It is not just about the skill set that someone has. I remember in the movie Chariots of Fire years ago, Jason, where Harold Abrams was sitting there with the directors, president of Cambridge, and he said, "Gentlemen," he was working. They called it a plebeian attitude towards hard work. And he said, "Gentlemen, you only delude yourselves into thinking that you can achieve greatness without effort, and that you are endowed with this, and that it is without effort." We've created a situation in college where, again, I'll call it a socialist mentality, where it is not about working hard or outworking people. Listen, in music, science, or art, or anything else, they would never put a limit on the amount of hours that you're able to train. And this is so bogus that they think tennis players are losing time in the classroom and they're doing poorly, when tennis and golf are the sports where players do absolutely the best anyway. So we need to get back to a mindset, and I would ask the ITA to step up and to start doing some doggone action and research toward trying to get more matches put in a better training situation. Don't come up with these abbreviated formats and things that just make a joke. It's laughable. It's laughable to have tiebreakers for third sets and to have no ad scoring when you should be trying to develop players. And again, this is our biggest training ground. So number seven, let's get colleges back to the place where they're developing players. And so. Anyhow, I could go on for that one forever, Jason, but that's number seven on our list.
Let me just say there that You know, that is the college tennis coach's fault. They are letting the NCAA, the ITA govern their rules, and they are not putting up any kind of effort to stop it or to overchange things. So, you're right on there. I on my show we talk about these used car salesmen that portray themselves as college tennis coaches. They're not developers of any kind, and yet they don't want to serve on committees. They don't want to do this. They react to rules that come down, and they're not any strong heroes in that world, and the ITA is really not doing its job as far as enhancing college tennis.
Yeah, and again, the people get on these committees. I'm applying for a lot of committees now, Jason, that I have more time. But the committees, usually the people are on those, it's a very liberal mentality, and again, it's almost that Cambridge or Oxford mentality. I always say that their belief is you're ready for this one, you're from Texas. It's all right to be smarter than your hound dog, you don't want to have to outrun them. And I do not think that that is the way to develop top players. You have to, it's blood, sweat, and tears, and come on. How are we, USTA now, Jason, is saying that we're going to outwork the world. How in the world do you outwork the world when you have 10-point tiebreakers, 10-minute break after the second set at Kalamazoo when it's a scorching 83 degrees out, tiebreakers, no ad scoring, abbreviated, and all of these silly things that we're doing in for style instead of for the sweat off the brow that we need. Number eight, with college tennis, I want to remind everybody that Title IX was not set up to protect women from every other country in the world. And that goes along with number six. But I wanted to say this about Title IX. It is a very great and good and fair rule, very, very, very poorly implemented. It was never, ever meant to destroy men's sports in its inception. And I would like to put that out there and say this right up front. And twice in my last 3 years, I had to cut the number one ranked player in the state of South Carolina because he was my number 11 guy on the team to meet with these silly rules called proportionality. So he had as many bodies in the seat as you did men with females. And in not letting football being out of the equation. And most of the people pushing women's athletics have forced football to be in the equation. 110 bodies, 85 scholarships, that right out of the blocks you have to have that many women's scholarships. In doing so, they have diluted and cut men's sports to bits, and that was not the purpose. So wish number eight is that we would have Title IX fairly implemented. The minority has now become American men in colleges. Number one, best benefit is foreign females. Number two, it's a tie between international males and foreign and American females. Number four, left out American men. It was not meant to be a thing that buried American men and their opportunities. So that's a big number eight there, Jason.
Okay, let me ask you, in big-time college athletics, do men's basketball and women's basketball get the same number of scholarships?
I think women get 15, men get 12. Women get more.
Baseball, softball, how about that?
I don't know those. I think women get 15, men get 11. I know in soccer it's like women get 15. Listen, and everybody knows about tennis that men get 4.5 max, women get 8.
Yeah.
What happened? It's a total numbers package about proportionality. If your school out of 100, excuse me?
I was going to say, I guarantee you that's not what Title IX was set up to do. It was provide opportunities. And what tennis did was is they accepted getting the shaft in this. And 4.5 scholarships, it's nowhere close to the ones that basketball, track, softball, all these other sports are close. You'd say 15, 11. Tennis got the shaft here by getting cut in half.
You bet. You bet they did. And, again, most of the scholarships for women are going to foreign women. Now, how does that make sense? Title IX was not set up to protect foreign women. It was set up to protect my two daughters that I'm going to want to play college sports and yours and everybody's in the United States of America. It was not set up to protect women from France or Portugal or Egypt or wherever they're coming from. And the sad thing is that 65 or 70%, I think the status was $63 million worth of scholarships last year went to foreign students. Most of those to foreign women who are pushing out American women. And it has not, in the past 20 years, Title IX has not increased that tremendously the amount of women playing tennis. Again, 18 years old, I think it's a one-third men have, I forget how many thousand it was, 20 years ago it was 24,000 versus 8 competitive in the 18 and under age group. So really women have, it's 3-1 women, men competing numbers over women, but they only get half as many scholarships. So therefore it's a 6-1 overload against the men. This is not what Title IX was meant to be. Again, a great rule, very poorly implemented, and we need to talk about it. We need to have some people out there have the guts to come up and speak out against this. Let's go to number 9 as our time is running down on us. It goes to the USGA.
Let me tell our live listeners, we're going to lose them, but I want you to get through all 12 of these, and they can listen to the podcast afterwards. You go, and I won't interrupt the rest of the show.
Okay, sounds good. And if we do go over, go to podcast and listen to the whole show. Number 9 goes to the USTA. USTA, very, very simple. Let's have bottom-up management at the USTA, not bureaucratic top-down management. It's real simple. And again, I think this is happening. I believe this is happening. J.P. Weber had Jerry Baskin on Sunday. And he pointed this out, and I believe it's true, that under the new leadership that we do have with the USTA, they are having these town hall meetings, and they are asking questions. Now, whether this is necessity because of, like, the UR Tennis Network calling them out on things and because of the blogs out there calling them out, but it used to be an arrogance that surpassed anything I've ever seen in management, where it was, I'm okay, you're not okay, all every day of the week, telling coaches who've coached for 40 years and 45 years that their input didn't matter. And most of the criticism has come, and that gets back to number 1. As we start criticizing, that's not the way to do it. What we need to do is empower people in the trenches. The great coaches who are out there, whether it's the Robert Lansdorps or the Wayne Bryans, or the Jerry Baskins, or the Jason Haynes, or the J.W. Eisenhowers, or the Paul Scarpas, or the J.P. Webers, and all of the coaches that are out there, we need to empower them and have bottom-up management. Again, I want to give some applause to the USTA for their town hall meetings they're having. They do act like they're listening. Now, again, whether or not they are you know, we'll see, but we need to talk about this. Now, we will go off the live network here in about 1 minute, but stay on. You can listen to the rest of the show on your phone or your podcast later. And again, we will go back over these next week very quickly, the top 12 wishes on the USA Christmas tennis wish list. Okay, but now what? One of the things in the mentoring that USTA needs to do is to absolutely get young coaches involved, but to teach young coaches, and this follows up with the bottom-up management, the young coaches, you need to learn and learn your craft very, very well, every way and any way you can. It is not just a system that you learn. It is teaching skills that takes years and years and years to develop. Mentorships are incredibly important to young coaches out there. We would say that you need to get someone above you that you mentor and you can follow around. You need to get someone below you that you are teaching and then have a good even level of friends that hold you accountable to a higher level. And this is the way to do it. I've told coaches very, very often when they're young that mentoring is the way to do it best. And there, and I don't want to say there are no good young coaches, but there's so many things that happen in competition and along the way in a tennis career that I really do believe that is a game of experience. And I would compare it to you can get your certificates and those things much like a second lieutenant in the ROTC program might get their leadership badges and certificates, but there's nothing that surpasses mentoring somebody who's been in the field. Grab onto one of the older coaches and these old experienced guys that pass their wisdom down like diamonds that they're passing to you. And really and truly, this is the way to go, and understand that it takes time and knowledge must turn to wisdom. It is not about knowledge only. It is about wisdom that is really the truth of time and tested things. And so this is for young coaches. We're off to number nine now with USTA. Never, ever, 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 ever. USTA, are you listening? You could have your cake and eat it too. Do not mandate things. Come on. This is the most arrogant thing. That's the best I could say. It surpasses anything I've ever seen, that you would get so many great coaches out there enraged this past year over something that is so insignificant as using different colored balls or sponge balls or whatever. Every coach out there wants to use any tool and every tool in order to learn. And you would have your cake and eat it too if you were just clever enough to have come up with a system where maybe people could graduate out of the green balls, yellow balls, the pink balls, whatever the color balls that you want to use. You could graduate out of them as quickly at 6 or 7 or 8 years old. Remember this, USTA. Skill should be maybe age-related, never age-determined. Therefore, if you do, you will, again, inhibit learning, and it's a socialist system that pushes putting everybody into the same bracket. We are not anyone else except the United States of America. Freedom reigns in the United States of America. This is not Russia or any European country. We can learn from those countries, but by golly, freedom is our number one thing here. And when you take away a freedom by mandating things, look, you take the heart and the soul out of good people. And pretty much they will become robots, and they'll be spewing out a company line and company activities, but you will not have people's heart. Dump the mandate, be clever, set up a system that is age-related, not age-determined, 18 and under, just like the ITF, maybe 5 level, just like the ITF, 14 and unders, why not have 5 or 6 levels? Maybe the entry levels, level 6, that is, and a level 5, let them use the yellow ball or the green balls or whatever you want, and then allow them by the third level that they grow to, if they're 6 or 8 or 10, let them promote themselves out of it. Let them get out of it quickly. Boy, you'd have players working hard to get out of the little baby sissy balls that you use. And let me say that these green balls, they're one of the greatest teaching tools ever. But to compete with them, every and any kid who has any competitive nature inside of them is going to want to get out of the baby balls as quickly as they can and move up to the yellow balls. And again, if our sports scientists out there think that, oh boy, we need to be like Europe, no, we don't. We need to be like the United States of America. Move on to number 10. Number 10. Let's use the universal rating system, at least check it out. Check out August 8th, Coach Dave Fish, about the universal rating system. I think it's one of the best systems out there, and the universal rating system would allow people to grow vertically within their own arena, and they would not have to chase points all over the place. Check it out, folks. UniversalTennisRating.com. Ratings are better than rankings. Ratings give you hope. When you have a rating, it could be the lowest rating. You will fight to get a higher rating and a higher and a higher rating. When you rank people, especially just because we have computers, we rank 400 to 500 people. It's not like people get a big charge out of moving from 380 to 340 to 270 to 260 to 195. It's not like a college coach looks at a player and goes, wow, let's look at this player. He's moved up from 400 to 195. This is ridiculous. Ratings work better. I would give my great applause to Julie Regg and her tennisrecruiting.net that has proved that her blue chip, five-star, four-star rating has been a hit with all kids out there. So that's number 10. Let's go on with the universal rating system. USTA. We need, USTA, if you're listening, we really, really need an avenue between junior tennis and professional tennis that is a clear pathway. We are dropping the ball in colleges. Let's have a clear pathway. Can you bring back those old amateur tournaments you had? You remember the 21 and under circuit where you gave good gold balls and kids could be national champions? Do you remember these middle-range tournaments that allow players to make a jump between juniors or colleges even into professional ranks? Please bring these back. Also, satellite events were much better than these futures events. The satellite events weeded out the pretenders and rewarded the contenders, contenders over pretenders, very quickly, and it taught players how to play a lot of matches. They got a lot of matches, learn how to win, learn how to lose, and they So I really think we need somehow to bring, again, with number 11, we need to bring back the old 21 in the tournament, the amateur tournaments, and I hope USTA will listen to this and pay some attention because we absolutely need this. And go along with that, it could be number 11 as well. We need more pro events in this country. If I had a wish list, we used to have 70 or so back in the 80s. The statistics is back in the 80s. We had 42 players in top 100 in U.S., out of the U.S., that played professional tennis. 42. 39 had gone to college. But we also had 70 professional events. Now we have about 15 or maybe 18. Horrible. We need to figure out why all the pro events have dried up, and we either need another circuit out there or we need more pro tournaments. But we need a way for players, again, to make the transition. Again, we're right on the edge of breaking through with as many players as we have in the top 1,000. But for whatever reason, our kids find themselves entering the pros, and they're not equipped for the journey. So that's number 12. That was number 11. I wanted to say about number 12, and I wanted to say this, and I thought about the many, many things I could say for something that is very, very important and impacting here as we make our wishes for Christmas. But again, I really, really believe, whether it's by design or not, maybe it's just the way our world is going, that we really are not appealing to the heart of people. We're appealing to the results or the outside. Now, it's the computers, as we know, it's the iPhones, it's all the one-dimensional stuff that our children do. But their kids are not developing heart. And they're not developing the passions that come along with sports, music, art. I even say cursive writing and creative writing, cursive instead of printing, where your penmanship actually has a personality. We need to get to the heart of the matter and acknowledge that tennis is not a sports science to the majority. It is an affair of the heart, and it is an art form. And I would like to, for tennis, my biggest Christmas wish before I sign off today is that tennis is recognized once again as an art form, and we treat it as such, and we promote excellence through hard work. We promote excellence in speaking to the king or the queen and all men and women, not the little boys or girls, and dumb everything down for what it looks like. We need to ask people to rise up and put their whole hearts and their whole passion into tennis and into every sport that they do, because we certainly, absolutely, positively do need affairs of the heart to go on. We need PE in schools. We need music in schools. We need art in schools. And now stop, folks. Think a minute. They always say, well, the funding has been cut. Do you really think that that's the truth? You and I had it back in the 50s. We had art, music, sports. My golly, at our CYO school, we had five sports that we played all year round. And they were sponsored by the schools. We used to have elementary school sports. Do you really think that this is the case, or do you think that maybe, just maybe, that there is a motive there to take the passion out of our children? Let's get back to where tennis is treated as a art form, and let's help it put passion, not just passion for competing, but the passion for just the love of the game and the hitting of the ball, the relationship with other people, the friendships, and all of the things that kept each and every one of us in this game for so many years. May God bless all of you. Have a wonderful Christmas season. Hug your family tight. Count your blessings one by one by one. And be sure, step up and be spiritually correct. Forget the political correctness, you know, as far as worrying about it so much when it interferes with your spiritual correctness. Let's be spiritually correct, politically correct, when it doesn't go against that part, the spiritual correctness of us. And remember that this is a lot more than just how you hit the ball. Remember, you're in the process of winning or losing. Every day, every life has very little to do with a win or a loss. God bless you, and this has been American Tennis with Chuck Creasy, and we'll talk to you next week.